As consumers, we are bombarded by it at every turn, like the Incredible Hulk being bombarded by gamma rays. But what makes some media endure, while others are banished to the forgotten black hole of obscurity, never to be heard from again? Who or what decides this? Hetero life mates Steve and Yehel want to know, and they want to know now. This is Obscurity Now.
And what's up, Obscurians? It's time for another episode of Obscurity Now, the show that takes a look at weird and almost forgotten pieces of media, and then we decide if they should be remembered for all of human history or tossed in the black void of obscurity, never to be heard from again. My name is Steve. I'm one of the hosts, and with me, he's known as Sting's other favorite wrestling partner. It's Stang.
Do you remember Stang?
Don't.
It was like Booker T dressed up as Sting very briefly during the Russo era, and he came out and like did a run in it. I can't remember if he called himself Stang or maybe the announcer. Maybe I think Russo was on commentary. Maybe Russo called him that.
So what you're basically saying is yeah. Slight racist overtones. Is that what's going on there?
Yeah. I mean, there was quite a bit of that during the Russo era. G.I. Bro, oh, anyone? Man.
That's actually the name of Fred Williamson, like, blaxploitation movie, G.I. Bro. You ever see it?
Oh, really? No. Actually, now that I think about it, I think Booker T did wrestle as G.I. Bro, like, of his own volition before he made it to WCW.
I could see him wanting to do that. I mean, he's like the living embodiment of, like, sort of 70s blaxploitation, like 70s, 80s blaxploitation.
Yeah. Booker T?
They always say, you know, sucka all the time. And I mean, that was his.
Wasn't that his brother? I think you're thinking
of
his brother.
They both said it. Stevie Ray said it.
No, Stevie. Oh, yeah. Can you dig it, sucka? Yeah, I guess you're right.
I think you're thinking of somebody else.
Well, Stevie Ray had a talk show called Sucka's Gots to Know. He had like a talk show segment on WCW. So I think that's why I associate sucka and suckas, the plural of sucka, with him. We were like way off track, but he did commentary for WCW Worldwide. Did you ever watch that?
I'm sure I caught an episode here or there, but I don't remember him doing commentary.
It was like a syndicated, you know, like Saturday WCW show. But yeah, he did commentary and he was actually very good.
Nice. Well, I would just like to say welcome back to Creative KB. We haven't seen you in a few weeks. We were wondering what happened to you.
Oh, hey.
He's here in the chat. And please feel free to.
I assume he got a cease and desist from No Fear.
He was just too good. Yeah. But no, I don't think we're way off track, in case anyone is confused or couldn't read the title. Today we are celebrating the filmography of the pro wrestler Sting, not the bass player for the Police. He recently retired last week, had his last match ever, allegedly last match. And
I think he'll be...
Yeah, it seems pretty permanent. I thought, what better way to celebrate his legacy than by looking at some of the movies that he was in? Of course, tonight's also, or at the recording of this, it's also the Oscars. But, I mean, really, who gives a crap about that? Nobody here, that's for sure. Sting's legacy is more important, so we... I went through the archives. He doesn't have like a huge filmography, but this one I thought was going to be maybe the most fun. I mean, of course, of course we could have watched, and I was really close to going with Ready to Rumble, but I wanted to get something where Sting was like front and center. He just, what's up?
We probably should have watched like the episode of Thunder in Paradise.
See, I knew
on.
You would want to do that. I mean, but since we already covered Thunder in Paradise,
but it would have been timely. There's actually a very popular Thunder in Paradise video that was released today.
Really? By who? Someone? By like someone who wasn't
show.
You?
Yeah.
What is the video about?
Some kind of review channel. I haven't watched it yet, but I've had like 10 people send it to me. I have the video, everyone. I'm going to get to it.
Lay off this guy, internet.
Yeah, but Creative KV in the chat said that he was busy starting his black market merch business, but then had to clear out of stock when RoboCop caught wind of his schemes. You should have employed children to do it by hypnotizing them with cereal.
Oh, man, I saw the craziest clip on TikTok. I don't know why I didn't send it to you. It is from the 1988 Oscars, hosted by your favorite comedian, Pee Wee Herman, a.k.a. Paul Rubens. I can't remember what the setup was. It's basically the old gimmick where some stagehand comes up and whispers something in his ear, and Pee-wee is like, "Oh, it's man, I need to work on my Pee-wee impression." And he's like, "This is live TV. What, we can't stop right now." And then the Ed 209 comes out, and he threatens the Ed 209 comes out and threatens Pee-wee. He says that he wanted the Oscar for like best sound effects editing or something. And then for no reason, Pee-wee flies in the air as the Ed 209 is shooting at him. And then RoboCop comes out without Sting. And I've got to find it and send it to you because it's insane. If the Oscars were still like that today, I might actually watch, but they're not.
This might be the one thing Pee Wee Herman's done that might entertain me.
Oh, God. So, forgive him.
Well, I mean, he's just not. Creative KV said he tried, but the kids were all gainers, referring to Chris Gaines, and wouldn't stay in the warehouse. Total rebels.
And since we're.
Yeah, oh, man. There was a Chris Gaines reference that came up in something last week that I forgot to send to you, but I don't know. I feel like I see Chris Gaines references more and more frequently.
It's like a beautiful mind where you just see it everywhere you look in the world. But
yeah, well, speaking of a beautiful mind, Sting.
Yeah, well, I just wanted to say real quick that for normal human beings who actually enjoy the antics of one Pee Wee Herman, especially the movie Pee Wee's Big Adventure, I want to let everyone know that I went to the Cabazon Dinosaurs over the weekend. Those are the dinosaurs where Pee-wee and, what was that girl's name, Simone, where they sat and watched the sunrise. They still exist. You can go visit them. They're, I don't know, out in somewhere in Southern California near Joshua Tree. But
they don't let you masturbate.
Well, I mean, you can. You just got to be careful. Actually, there was a sign that clearly said, "No masturbating," because, you know, I can only, well, I don't want to go down that path, but.
Wait, was the sign thing real?
No, of course not.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't, you said it so seriously this time when you made the joke off air. I don't know. Hey, I'm just making sure. I know how you Pee Wee Herman fans are.
We're a real mixed up breed. But anyway, we are here to discuss Sting. Before we jump into the Obscuratron, why don't you tell me, what are your thoughts on Sting the Wrestler?
I don't think I'm as big a fan as you are, because I think you're kind of, you're like a big little stinger, right?
Big little stinger,
really into him.
Sure. Yeah, I could say that I am, yes.
I actually, like, enjoyed his AEW run probably the most out of anything he's ever done with. Maybe the exception of Joker, Sting, and TNA. But to be honest, like, I was never like a big Sting fan. And when he was in WCW, the Crow stuff was okay. I mean, like, the storyline was good. I just wasn't a big fan of like him just dressing up like the Crow. Like, it just felt like he was just literally copying the Crow's like style. But over the years, he's changed his stuff, and I've definitely come to respect and appreciate Sting a lot more. I have a lot of respect for him and his mentality towards wrestling, whereas a lot of old timers, including one Randall Lay, aka T-Bone Funk, we're in this group chat with him, and he's always complaining about like modern wrestling and this and that. And Sting, and you know, if you read the interviews with him, he's embraced it, and he's always, the last few years, talked about how he's the one learning from the young guys, and you know, he's trying to evolve to like change with the times, and he did. He like started taking like these huge bumps off rafters,
stupid bumps, yes, for a guy his age.
Yeah, for any age, but especially for a guy in his 60s. But yeah, and apparently, like, it's Darby Allin and AEW are always trying to talk him out of doing this stuff. It's usually his idea. And yeah, he went through like a pane of glass this last week in his match, took a couple other big bumps, had a great match. He still moves really damn well. Yeah, he went out with a great match. So, anyways, he's good.
Yes, as Yahel said, I'm a huge Sting fan. I don't know. It's like you go from your, you start out with your Hulk Hogan when you're like six or whatever. And then somehow, I guess my parents got cable or something. And then you see like a guy like Sting, who I would say has a lot of kind of the same larger-than-life qualities as a Hulk Hogan, but is allowed to wrestle at a much more like athletic level, I guess. And I think maybe that's what attracted me to the Stinger back in the day. And he always has a lot of great energy for his promos. Maybe not exactly what he's saying is like the most, eloquently thing ever written or come up with in a promo. But I don't know. He's got a way to like excite people and a great moveset. Back during the Crow time, I kept waiting for him to go back to what is now known as a Surfer Sting, but it never happened. I'm still waiting for it.
No, I think he did it once in TNA.
Well, I remember Mr. Kennedy came out dressed as a Surfer Sting, and he looked crazily like him, like a lot like him.
Well, I remember like one time, like Sting, he went away for like 6 months or something like that in TNA. I think it was part of an angle. And he came back, and from what I remember, he had like, he still had his medium length, like kind of like his hair now, where it's a little long but not long. He still had that hair. It was dark, but he had like the Surfer Sting paint, and he came out like, and he wrestled like with just like long jeans. He came back like ripped with like abs and shit. Like it was real random. It was like a feud with Jeff Jarrett. Or like Sting came back like jacked.
I think I vaguely remember that. But yeah, huge.
Dude, did you watch the post the media scrum after his pay-per-view match last week? His retirement match. Just real quick, I asked him a question. Somebody from the media about, I don't know, his early days when he used to wrestle with the Ultimate Warrior when they tagged together as the Dingo, when he was the Dingo Warrior. Anyway, and he just like says, oh man, when I think back to those days, I just think, we were just two dumb roided out guys. And then he's like, everybody starts laughing, and he's like, well, it's true, we were roided out. And he's like, that stopped for me in 1990, not for some other people.
Nice. Oh, that's awesome. When was the first time you ever saw Sting try to act?
I mean, like outside of wrestling, I don't remember, but I watched this movie when it aired.
Oh, did? Oh, wow.
Did it come on
after
so
like an episode of Nitro? Or maybe I remember seeing like commercials.
I remember there were quite a few commercials during Nitro and Thunder as well. I don't know that it aired after. I don't think it would have aired right after
it
Nitro.
Been really late.
Nitro would have gone off the air like at 11, and that's like a bad time for to premiere a movie.
Real men go to Domino's and get noided out. No fear. That's I love a noid reference in 2024. I love it.
Oh man, the speaking of references, the commercials. So we watched this on YouTube. I'll drop a link in the chat here. But whoever uploaded it, like, the quality isn't great, but they kept all the commercials.
Yes.
And that was my favorite.
Yeah, if you're gonna watch this movie, watching the commercials. This is the way to do it because this is as it was meant to be seen. At 4:3 ratio on the TNT channel with the commercials kept in, not in HD. But do you remember the first time you saw Sting in a non-wrestling role?
I don't know. I'm sure it was like a guest spot.
It's got to be the show we were just talking about, Thunder in Paradise, right? Probably.
Maybe. I really don't know.
Well, I remember he was, and I was close to picking this for us to review. He's the villain in Super Force, like the RoboCop ripoff show that was on in like the late 80s, okay. early 90s. I think he probably played a robot, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. All right. Well, without any further ado, are you ready to dive into Shutter Speed, starring Steve the Stinger Borden?
Yes.
Welcome to your feature presentation.
In the chat, Creative KV had asked if we've covered the California Raisins. Didn't we cover them?
We covered the Claymation Christmas special, which has the California Raisins in it.
Mm-hmm. That's what it is. Oh, man, this movie's on Tubi? Oh,
I wish.
Could have just watched it there. Oh, no.
Yeah,
it's just
the same thing happened to me. So random. Yeah, I saw it and I went to, because I would have liked to, you know, if it looked a little bit better, but still watchable.
And yeah, I mean,
but
better.
Still, if you want to watch this, it's the YouTube rip is perfectly watchable, for better or worse. All right, so Shutter Speed premiered February 11th, all the way back in 2000. Sorry, I had to. And here's a synopsis. Riley Cooper, a renegade L.A. cop forced to seek the help of his estranged brother, a homicide detective, when his model fiancé and photographer friend are kidnapped. The two must put their differences aside to avenge a dead friend and to rescue Riley's fiancé. And this was directed by one Mark Sobel. I feel like his name has already come up a few times on this show. He has directed episodes of Quantum Leap, Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman, The Commish, and our already covered on a previous episode, Sliders. Oh, wait, excuse me. Sliders. And this was written by a brother duo, Carrie and Chad Hayes. They've written episodes of The Flash. They wrote The Conjuring 1 and 2, and 10 episodes of our favorite show, Baywatch Nights. Of course, this is like a Lionsgate production in association with TNT, and that is basically it for me. Who were, aside from Sting, who were some of the other people who were in this TV movie?
So playing Sting's brother, Cliff Davis, that's the character's name, it's played.
I just think it's funny. All right, well, I'll wait till you get to his fiance, and then we'll go from there.
All right, so it's played by David Lovegren, who's been in quite a few things. He's another one of these guys. You recognize the face, but you know you don't know his name. He's been in a lot of stuff, including the Chris Isaac show. I forgot Chris Isaac had a show.
I never knew about it. Okay.
Then we have. Well, I guess we can get to her now. Daisy Fuentes playing the model. Her name? Kenzie, I think. Yeah, I forgot that she was in this, and when it came up, I'm like, man, this is like the most 2000s casting. She was kind of known for mostly from MTV, if I remember correctly. She was like a VJ on there, and she was pretty good, too, from what I remember, actually. She had like a lot of personality. Not so much in this movie, but they don't really give her a lot to do either.
The sad part is when they do give her something to do at the end, and it's not very good. But she's your basic. She was like a model, and then they became a TV personality basically. And I guess this was her attempt at serious acting. I mean, did she have anything else in there that she tried to do aside from this?
I mean, Shutter Speed was nowhere near the first thing she did. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It's like the 14th.
Yeah, I feel like it was probably
something like that.
I mean, I wouldn't say that her career is over or anything, but like maybe towards the end of the Daisy Fuentes hype train.
Yeah, probably. I mean, she's like got like some like guest spots and stuff, but I see in quite a few things. She was in Clueless as herself, the TV show. And she was in Sybil as herself. Right. She was in Dream On as herself.
So she's
herself.
Not playing Lady Macbeth or anything.
Right. Like, have her credits before this. She's playing herself. Some of them she's not. But, I mean, most of this stuff, like, in her IMDb is, stuff from, like, being a TV personality. She's got lots of those. And she's on some TV show recently called, I guess she was a guest, like a talk show called Really Famous with Kara Meyer Robinson.
Oh, everybody, you don't know Kara Meyer Robinson? She's the talk of the town.
I don't know. Anyways, moving right along, this has like a really big cast.
They spent their money on Sting and Daisy, and everyone else is just pretty bland and kind of forgettable. Everyone tried real hard, I guess, but, it's just, it is what it is.
So Creative KV says that there's a guy who was in one episode of Star Trek The Next Generation in a background shot, but I don't know who that is. So there's a Star Trek connection in here, but I didn't bother going through
Creative KV is angling for like a research job. And
he's basically a producer.
Yeah, hey, and if you want to work for free, then sure, you're welcome to join the Obscurity Now team anytime you want. Oh, he was joking. So were we.
Boo. Yeah. You're fired from nothing. All right, so I do want to mention two people, Garwin Sanford. He plays like the main bad guy, whose name is Angelo. This guy actually has a lot of credits in his IMDb, been tons of stuff. But again, I kind of recognized him, but I also don't know from what, but he's got a lot of stuff in his credits. Star Trek is unfortunately not one of them. And the only other person that I really wanted to mention was Mackenzie Gray, who plays Nigel Dickinson, because this guy just also had a shit ton of credits, like 180 something credits, which is quite a lot. Looks like he's done some voiceover work, but yeah, there's a bunch more people in the cast, but
mention for Garwin, again, our lead bad guy, who I'm pretty sure is faking a British accent in this. He is movie called Independence Disaster. Disaster. That might be worth a watch. So unless there isn't anything further... are you ready to get into Shutter Speed?
Yeah, let's
all
get
right.
into
it. So if you watch this on YouTube, you get like the TNT opening, which is kind of nostalgic for me. I mean, I used to watch a lot of stuff on TNT, especially Monster Vision. I forgot, were you a Monster Vision guy?
I would, not religiously, but yeah, I'd catch it from every now and then. Was that the one that was hosted by Joe Bob?
Yeah. Yeah, what about USA Up All Night? Did you ever watch that one?
Oh, yeah. I used to catch that, too.
All right. So we are in Berlin at night. We know it's Berlin because Das Wunderkind, Alex Wright, is dancing in the background. I may have added that in myself. No, they tell us that we're in Berlin. And there's a guy sitting in the back of a...
Berlin, East LA.
Exactly. A guy is sitting in the back of a BMW. He unrolls his window. That guy sitting in the back of the BMW is our main bad guy, Garwin. I don't know. His name cracks me up. And his main henchman comes up. He rolls down the window. And basically, he's like, he says that, the guy is around here somewhere. And Garwin is just all like, don't come back without that camera. And now we are in an alley, and against a wall, a man grimaces, holding the aforementioned camera. And there is a young man sitting nearby at a table in a restaurant, and he is basically waiting for him, even though they don't tell us that. Main henchman guy from before opens fire on the guy in the alley. He runs away towards the restaurant. The guy sitting by himself grabs the camera, like after because that guy who was running, he got shot and fell. The bad guy from the car shows up. He sees all the bodies in the restaurant, and he looks to like a couple who's still alive, and he goes, "Sorry for ruining your dinner." Like, I guess trying to be a suave British guy or something. And then we roll the opening credits, basically. What were your initial thoughts on this cold open here?
Oh, man, just a real strange Grey Poupon commercial.
It basically was. yeah.
I do want to say, I think in the chat, Creative KV referring to what I believe he's referring to, one of the pictures of Sting in the crow makeup that you have on the Titan Tron, on the Titan Tron, the Obscuratron. He said, oh, right there in that pic, looks like a reject from the band Kiss.
it's funny that he brought that up because one of the big, and it's kind of sad that this is like the controversy surrounding like Sting's retirement, or not really sad, but just kind of, I don't know, eye rolling, where Sting said that his makeup was not a ripoff of the Crow, but of the band, like an homage to the band Kiss. Did you hear that?
No.
It just only came out like a week or two ago. I mean, it's a non-story, if anything.
But I mean, the Crow thing, from what I remember, was
right?
Scott Hall's
yeah,
idea.
But I mean, just
and Scott Hall was like, "Hey, you should look like the Crow."
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's. but yeah, for whatever reason.
And then he threw a toothpick at Sting.
He sure did. But what? Yeah. So what did you think about the cold open here?
It's okay. Just felt a little like a lot of this movie. I don't know, man. Like this movie feels very convoluted. And this beginning could have been done, I feel like, in a much simpler fashion. Like I feel like almost every scene in this movie is 50% to 33% too long. That's what I would say about the cold open. It's fine, but it could have been done faster.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, what did you think? I was like, this seems on par for a TV movie. And the weird thing about this movie is that it sort of straddles the line. I didn't know if we were going to get like a sort of Last Action Hero-y type police drama, or not drama, but police like action movie or something with lots of like maybe like one-liners and stuff like that. But it definitely doesn't go that way. Although sometimes it tries to be, as we are going to see. But yeah, I thought, this is maybe a little bit better than I was expecting. But at this point, I still wasn't exactly sure. After the credits, we see a guy loading film into a SLR camera. It says that we're in Seattle. And then Sting stands pensively in a hotel lobby watching a pregnant lady. He watches her climb the stairs. Then she drops her purse and follows her into the ladies' room. And, I guess that for people who've never watched like a movie like this, they're like, "Oh my God, he went into the ladies' room." And then it gets even better. He bursts through the stall and he holds a knife to her throat and then stabs her in the stomach. Oh my gosh. But it's a man, baby. Yeah. Like Austin Powers style. And then some people, I guess they hear the guy.
Well, he stabs her and then like sand or cocaine, I guess, supposed to be like comes out of her stomach or his stomach. But it looked like sand. I think it was supposed to be like
Drugs. And then some people come in and Sting identifies himself as a cop. Like clearly they're, this is a cliche or trope, if you will, of these kind of movies where, you know, I guess the idea is the reason why Sting looks the way he does with his like completely, his long hair and, I don't know, looking scary and stuff is because he's undercover, of course. And, the old, look out, he's going to murder a woman. But it's not. He's the good guy.
But, I mean, his hair here isn't that
right,
long.
But, I mean, I just say for a cop, it's like, I mean.
I get what you're saying. It's longer than you would expect. But yeah, it's not like long, like it would get, you know, during his, like, it's not as long as during his Crow run.
Right? And and here from this scene, I was then sort of veered back into, oh, this is going to be, you know, a sort of maybe not over the top, but like typical kind of action, like cop movie or something, since they're doing these kind of like typical cliches and stuff. But but as we're going to see, it doesn't exactly go that way. Cut to, it's a daytime. Sting races an attractive woman in a car, or she's in a car. He's on his cool motorcycle. I mean, literally looking like, I don't know, the Last Action Hero or the Terminator or something. Cut to, there was a model shoot and Sting arrives. And again, I guess they're still trying to go with, ooh, is Sting a bad guy? Look at him lurking around backstage at this supermodel shoot and stuff. And then he then watches the models on the runway. And then backstage, Sting approaches the lady he was racing. And surprise, surprise, it's his fiance. They kiss and flirt and blah, blah, blah. Any thoughts on what's going on?
Oh, man, it just felt so 2000s, like the music, the stuff with the models. But I mean, again, I feel like all this stuff just takes too long.
Yeah, it does. I mean, there's just really not a lot of story with this, or maybe they just didn't have the budget to, because they reuse the sets a lot. Like most of the movie takes place in the police station. And, of course, the warehouse where the bad guys do their counterfeiting or whatever it is that they do.
Yeah, they have a huge operation with like 100 people working there, as you do. like you said, it does feel a little cheap in that, because of the sets being reused. It is shot pretty competently, though, I will say.
I think that's a problem, is that it's too...
I actually agree.
It's too competent, and it's sort of, I think we're saying too much already, but it ends up getting into bland territory, as we're about to see.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say it right now. I mean, this movie, my problem with it is that it's generic. Like, the story is fine. It's not, like, really bad, but it's serviceable, but it's so by the numbers. Everything is so by the numbers. And everything, like I said, takes a little bit too long, in my opinion, to get going. And the other major problem, with this movie, Steve, is that Sting is not a bad actor.
No, as we're about to see. And
he's pretty decent.
That's why I was trying to look, again, for any kind of like backstage or behind-the-scenes information about this movie. Because as we're about to see... It goes into drama territory, like away from like cheesy action movie, as we're about. And I was just wondering, I'm like, right. Was Sting in charge of that? Did he really want to show his like acting chops? Cause he really gets a chance to do it as we're about to see.
Yeah. And he's good. I mean, Sting could have gone into acting. Like he's pretty good, especially, you know, he's a guy with outside of promos and stuff on WCW. That's really his only experience for the most part as an actor, you know? He does well, but again, because the story is so like by the numbers and kind of generic, you're just like, okay, this is a good performance, but what you're saying is so bland.
Absolutely.
Did you notice though that Eric Bischoff, it's not in IMDb, but on the credits, the opening credits, Eric Bischoff is one of the executive producers.
I did see that. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, so for those that don't know, Eric Bischoff was the executive producer slash guy that ran WCW for a long time when it was successful, and the NWO and all that stuff was there. So yeah, I thought that was interesting, and it might be one of those things where it's like, well, because Sting is under contract to WCW, like Bischoff gets a producer credit, and he really didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah.
I just thought it was interesting.
So now we are at said police station, and man, I know we've talked about it before, but have you ever watched the movie Samurai Cop?
Man,
Sting is looking exactly like Samurai Cop here. Very, very close, I wanted to do a side-by-side comparison, but I was too busy hanging out at the Cabazon Dinosaurs, and I just got them too late. Sting argues with the captain in typical cop fashion. He sits down, and then a dude gives Sting a camera. Actually, that dude is like, I think it's the camera guy who actually plays a part later. Anyway, it's the camera. He tells him that it was dropped off by his friend. And then Sting then calls the friend about the camera and leaves a message, which at first I didn't write that down, but it plays a big part later, so I had to write it down. So now we're in the locker room. Sting looks at a picture of an older man. I mean, and we find out later that it's his dad. By the way, when I say Sting, what I should be saying is Riley, because that is his name in the movie.
We can just call him Sting. I think
so. Sting arrives at his massive house. Sting is literally a Gary Sue in this movie. I mean, he's the best at everything, and like everything is going his way, aside from some family drama, as we're about to see. He like flirts with the dog sitter, which was kind of confusing. I was just like, especially when you find out that he's engaged to this model. I mean, he is flirting with her, right? Like,
I thought so.
It's supposed to be, I guess, harmless. I guess people are allowed to do that.
Yeah, I think maybe it's supposed to show like that he's just kind of like a nice, charming guy, kind of a thing.
Well, mission accomplished for sure.
I think the problem is Sting again is too good.
He really is. So he enters his mansion of a house, makes out with a supermodel wife who was making him dinner. Like, geez, this movie is just for like the saddest guys who are never going to have any of this stuff. We see the guy who took.
Steve, I know this is getting ahead of ourselves, but since we're already kind of talking about the relationship, I can't remember if it's in your notes or not, but I think we should discuss how Sting and what's her name, Kenzie, the supermodel wife, met, which is there was a charity auction where they were auctioning off cops for dates, and Daisy Fuentes. Well, I'm just gonna call her Daisy Fuentes. Daisy Fuentes was there, and she bought. Sting, and quote, we've been together ever since.
That's hilarious.
What a life. If it wasn't for his father being killed in front of him, what a life.
Yeah, that was definitely one of my criticisms from the beginning is that, Sting just has it all. He's the best at everything. But yeah, a little bit of family drama going on here. But, yeah, so the guy who took the camera at the beginning of the movie, he is being tortured by head British henchman, I can't remember his name, as to the whereabouts of a phone also, I guess, in addition to the camera. It doesn't really matter. They're also searching his house. And then as the henchman is, like, I guess, about to give up or maybe continue torturing the guy, he hears Riley/Sting's voice message, and that's how they find out that that Sting has the camera. And then we cut to man. I feel like this is the most cliche like archetype thing. Sting trying to sleep but having bad dreams about when his dad was gunned down. At this point, I thought it was his partner. As you continue to watch, you find out later that it's his dad. And then we get to the best part of the movie, the commercial break. And I didn't really watch a lot of the other commercial breaks because it was late and I needed to get to bed. But I did.
Yeah, I would say I watched like half of the
commercial
breaks. I watched
this one. There is a commercial for Steel starring Shaquille O'Neal coming up on TNT.
Oh, there's a lot of commercials for Steel throughout this.
We've got to watch that someday. I've never seen
it. Yeah, we do.
My favorite was... Oh, you've seen it? Like, why would you want to watch...
Yes, of course I've seen Steel. Steve, I love stupid, bad movies like that.
That's why we're here, right?
And I, funny enough, Shaq had to do all his own stunts because they couldn't find a stuntman big enough that would look convincing. So Shaq had to do all his own stunts.
He's the gift that just keeps on giving.
Yes, he is.
But there was a bad local car commercial, which I thought was awesome. And yeah, I guess those were.
There's a Domino's, not Domino's, Creative Caveat, as we think about Domino's.
Yes,
there's a Papa John's commercial because they're like the, because they're the sponsor for the movie, basically, that's presented by Papa John's. And they keep running this Papa John's commercial with this mom.
I remember this commercial
where this mom is visiting like her son at college and she's like, what have you been eating? He's like, oh, I've just been eating a lot of Papa John's. And she's like, oh, what about variety? And anyways, my favorite part of the commercial is that at one point she's like, well, what about vegetables? He goes, Mom, you can get like up to four vegetables on a pizza. Oh, like this is
well, I like
now.
It when he's like, I'm living better now than I ever did at home, and sits on his chair that's made out of pizza boxes.
And she spits on him, leaves.
Like, I'm cutting you out of my will. And then leaves, yeah. But no, man, it's so weird, like, the ability of commercials to, like, I guess, transport you back to, like...
Yeah, yeah, there's some Blockbuster commercials throughout it. Yeah, just, I don't know, like, it's, every once in a while, like, once a year, so I'll go down, like, a YouTube rabbit hole where I'll just watch, like, some old commercials for a little bit. In the 90s and 2000s. And yeah, it's weird how they can like just put you right back to that.
Well, I know other, I mean, now, of course, there are none like us, but other sort of retro YouTubers and stuff, they'll stream commercials.
Yeah, like not
right,
sexy
right,
ones.
Not with people with Sting-esque hair like Yahel here. Yeah, they'll watch a bunch of like commercials and do like a live stream and stuff. And hey, maybe we should someday. I'm just saying. All right, so back to shutter speed, which ironically is not very fast. We're in a dark room. Riley asks a photographer friend to take a look at the camera and to develop the film. Now we're back in the captain's office. Cap says Sting's brother is getting transferred, and Sting is not happy about it. This is when we really get to see some of Sting's range. And yeah, he's like too good. I was reading like another sort of review about this, and people and the reviewer was saying that, you know, Sting didn't ham it up like most wrestlers would, and I'd say that's a detriment to this movie. but a good thing
absolutely.
For Sting. I mean, if he wanted to be in more stuff, he could have been like, hey, look at this TV movie where I acted well. But whatever. Moving on.
He must not have wanted to get into acting. Because, I mean, besides this, he did a couple, like, Christian movies.
Oh, I almost picked one of those, yeah.
Oh, I'm glad you didn't. I've had enough of religious people for this week. But, it's weird that he didn't go into acting because he definitely has, like, talent and ability. He, you know, has a little bit of a name that could have opened some doors. But even without his name, I'm sure he would have done fine in auditions because... He's genuinely
very
good.
Charismatic. Yes, and, absolutely.
And anyone that's seen his TNA run, I mean, he's like, shows a lot of range in his TNA run, you know, from being regular Sting to his main event Mafia stuff to Joker Sting, where he acts like a maniac
icon.
Really
oh, that
well.
Was the best. Those are the days.
Like, he can do it. Yeah. He can do it all. Like, he can do comedy, drama, serial killer. He can do it everything. He can do it all. He's just like Riley in
best.
This movie. He's
yeah,
good at
exactly.
everything.
Yeah. So we're at the shooting range, and then Sting/Riley hits all the bullseyes because he's the best at everything, as Yahel was just saying. Then he goes and talks to his brother about the transfer. Now we're back at Sting's house. Sting and his wife are having a nice quiet dinner. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Fiance are having a nice dinner. And then for some reason in this film or in this scene, Sting's wife decided she really needed to show off her rack because I mean, I guess they weren't married yet and she still wanted to tease him or whatever. But, you know, what? It was just something that stood out to me. They talk about Sting's bro, and Kinsey, the wife, says that it's time to, like, you know, give him a chance. He's family, blah, 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 blah. Anything else to add about this scene?
No,
mention Daisy's Rack.
I don't want this to. Not so much Daisy's Rack, but did you catch the commercial that kept airing with like Damon Wayans? I can't remember if it was Damon or Marlon Wayans. It was like him hanging out with like some like Sports Illustrated swimsuit models,
Sort of reality TV show or something. Yeah.
It was like a show about the shooting of the Sports Illustrated cover or swimsuit issue, I guess. But and I guess him and this other girl were hosting it. But he just keeps like making these weird, like misogynistic slash flirty.
Well, that's what was in
like,
vogue back then, comedy wise.
yeah, and it's just like, and it's like supposed to be funny, but I mean, besides, it's not like super offensive. It's definitely kind of offensive, but it's just more like so not funny. And it's just like,
it was so weird
awful.
And poorly shot. That was weird. So time lapse, and wife wakes up to the sound of Sting. This was weird. So she hears like a piano chord being struck. And, like, this is in the middle of the night. And Sting's nowhere to be found in bed with her, which I'm sure she was very distraught about that. So she wanders down to see Sting, very emo-like, sort of hunched over the piano, just hitting the same chord over and over again. And I guess this is supposed to show us his anguish or something. I don't know. What are your thoughts on this?
I thought he was gonna like be revealed to also be a master pianist. It was like, because to me, I was like, oh, this is a Chekhov's gun. We're going to see him at some point, like, you know, tickling the ivories. But it never
Kinsey,
really happened.
You know, I never play anymore ever since Dad died. Oh, you should. You really should.
Dad would have wanted you to play. Well, he's not even here, is he?
Nice. So we're back at the police station again. And then there's a lady cop. She offers Riley's bro, whose name is Cliff. I just kept calling him Riley's bro for a while. Show him around. And now we're at a cafe. And Kinsey is having lunch with Cliff. Sting arrives. And, oh, he is not having it. He sees him and just turns the other way. Just he literally went, hum, and like turned the other way. And now we're back at Sting's desk. And the captain tells Sting that Kinsey's brother is dead. This is the big reveal that the guy who was getting tortured by British henchmen at the beginning, that is Kinsey's brother. And then Sting shows up at the crime scene. And yeah, sure enough, he's dead. There's some actual decent camera work that goes on in this scene. Did any of that stand out to you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, this is definitely a movie that you can feel was hampered by its budget, where, like, because sometimes you'll see, like you said, like an interesting shot. Then other times you'll see. So, you know, clearly the director and cinematographer, again, they're competent, but they probably didn't have the time and budget to do the kinds of shots they wanted to do. And you can really see it in the editing more than anything, because sometimes the editing is kind of like, wait, what? How did we get here? What just happened?
Right.
Like when I'm just gonna mention now because I don't want to forget it, but it turns out that like I don't even know what this character was. The guy that turns out to be working for the bad
Griffin,
guys, I guess
Griffin,
he was like did he work for like the cops or something, or he was like the chief or something? I was very unclear.
I don't know. He was he was like a friend of Sting's dad's back in the day, I think is what it was.
Okay. Okay. Well, anyway, so then there's like a sniper that's trying to shoot Sting while he's talking to Griffin, and the sniper like locks onto like Sting's face and shoots, but then it cuts to Griffin getting shot. And I'm just like, wait, what? How did that happen?
Yeah, one of the few action sequences in this action movie.
Yeah, but then, well, I'll wait till we get to it at the end because the final action sequence actually goes way too long.
Well,
I've never seen such a long action sequence with so much happening and yet nothing happening.
100%. But yeah, some of the angles in this I like. There was, they don't have a good shot of like how this house is set up. But for some reason, Sting is like on the second floor looking down at the dead body of Kinsey's brother. And the shot is like over his shoulder, and you can see Sting like looking down. I like that. And then Sting goes down, and then it's like a reverse, and there's like a fan behind him. Like, I don't, it's like one of the few times I was like, oh, somebody tried. Yeah. And I thought it was at least that was interesting. And then Sting drops the bomb. He goes, he was going to be my best man, which I don't know, was just funny because it's just so cliche. I loved it. So Sting once again talks to the captain, and he says something's going on. He can't sit still on it. But Cap says, okay, but the little bro, he's going to have to work with Cliff, and Cliff is going to have to be in charge. But Sting is okay with that because he's going to do anything it takes to find out who killed his best man. Sting talks to a guy about, and his name was Mark, being found dead. He's devastated, but clearly a bad guy. Oh, yeah, and this is Griffin. This is when he goes to talk to Griffin. He tells him about Mark, and it's so obvious that Griffin is a traitor, even though he acts all devastated. And then he mentions some guy by the name of Eric Knox, who I guess it's that guy at the very beginning. You know, we saw like cringing in the alley holding the camera.
Yeah, I think so.
So now we're
yeah.
back at everyone's favorite location, the police station.
Steve, sorry to cut you off, but did you mention that like Mark is Daisy Fuentes' brother?
Yeah, I did. And he was going to be the best man.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Sting once again argues with his brother. He says he's willing to work with him, but it changes nothing between them. The camera guy, I just call him Jimmy Olsen, once again shows up and he gives Sting these newly developed pictures, but says they have to send them away so the film can be scanned by a computer to look at it, like, you know, closer. Sting and Bro have a little walk and talk. Sting investigates Mark's house. Sting goes home to discover his house has now been ransacked, and the dog sitter has been killed. You can just see it on Sting's face. He was like, I flirted a little too hard. And then she died. She died because he couldn't have him, right? that was his first thought. But then he's like, oh, wait, I'm a cop. And yes, clearly someone killed her. So then Kinsey calls, and it's so weird having like old school landline phones back in the mix. But this I thought was funny. So Kinsey calls, Sting picks up. Sting tells her he's trying to tell her that some bad guys are coming to get her. But she keeps interrupting him, basically. Sting's like, will you shut up for a minute? And she gets pissed and hangs up. And I don't know. That cracked me up. Yeah.
It was weird. I was like, why is he telling her to shut up?
Why would you call her the C word? Which I was like, wow, for TNT, that is edgy. So then Sting rushes via motorcycle to the fashion show where Kinsey was talking to him on the phone. But British henchman grabs her. And on his way out, he decides to shoot like one woman, and she falls on the runway. I guess they thought this would be attempt at a little bit of style. There's all these like blinky lights going on, and there's a dead lady on the
very 2000s too.
I'm surprised they didn't do it in Mutant X. Sting arrives, and Lady Cop says that Kinsey is gone, and then you get another sort of a Sting moment where he sits and thinks like for a second, then he kind of explodes and he goes, somebody must have seen something. And although not even that over the top, he skirts it.
No, he makes it work.
He really does. So now we cut to it's basically a close up of a printing press, and they're printing money. We are in the warehouse or lair of the bad guys. The henchman leads Kinsey to the head bad guy. What was his name again? Angelo Diamond. That's what it was. Where are we here? Camera guy takes pics of dog watcher. I don't understand what that is, but I was getting really bored here.
Yeah. You wrote it.
so now we're back with the Captain and Sting. Cap tells Sting to slow down, or he's going to put him in a cell himself. Sting's bro, Cliff, looks at the pic of he and his dad and Riley, and he remembers the stakeout they were on. And then we kind of get some a flashback of they're like in some bar. And this is a see, this is where this movie kind of skirts the line, because like, why would you put an entire family on like a stakeout together, like two brothers? And
they weren't on a, it wasn't the whole family, because and it was a little confusing the way it was explained, because it's like the dad wasn't supposed to be there. He just shows up. And it kind of sounded like Sting also wasn't supposed to be there, and he just went because the dad went.
Because Cliff was so green, they both thought he couldn't handle it? Something like that?
No. Sting's dad thought like he couldn't handle it. And because later on, Sting says something like, that he felt guilty for letting his dad go.
And he didn't go
intervene.
He went there as a father.
Yeah, and I thought that that's why Sting then went to, like, go, you know, basically try to help his dad, keep his dad
from
getting
killed. It's so convoluted. And the one thing I will say about this movie is that I guess the backstory is a little different. I mean, usually there's not this much family drama in these kind of movies. Like, it's usually always just a lone renegade cop.
Yeah, but, like, Sting and his brother have, like, three heart-to-hearts.
And that's another problem is that, you know, you said that this movie is hampered by its lack of budget. And I think that's, like, the trade-off. It's like they knew they didn't have enough money for more action scenes, so they're just like, oh, well, we're just going to have a family drama instead.
How dare they try to give this
movie
substance?
Well, see, it was too much substance, as we're going to see.
Well, the problem was, like, it was a lot of the same stuff. Like, there's, like, three scenes with him and his brother kind of, like, even after they make up, having a heart-to-heart where they forgive each other. It's like they do it like two or three times, and those scenes go on forever. And again, Sting is better than the other guy.
He is.
Sting lets out a little
oh,
tear.
Oh, man. I fake clapped, and I said, give that man the Oscar, even though this is a TV movie, and I don't think this qualifies for Oscars. But yeah, I was like, wow. I'm like, is he going to do it? Is he going to give the fake tear? Oh, he did. Oh, wow. I popped for it. I did.
Yeah.
All right. We're back at the police station. The phone rings, and it's the bad guys. Sting pretends it's not the bad guys, and then he takes the camera. I love it. I mean, this is only movie cop logic. He'd be like, hey, I'll take that. Go ahead. You don't have to worry about it. And then Cliff approaches Sting in the locker room. He tells him, Sting tells Cliff basically to get out of his way and let him do things his way, more or less. So now we're in the parking garage. Sting meets with some of the Angelo's henchmen to make the exchange for his wife. And as it's going down, even though, like, I don't know, Sting, some of his moves here are a little questionable. He, like, basically gives them the camera even though his wife isn't there. But then he says later that there's, like, a transmitter in it or something.
Yeah. He had, like, a tracking device.
So I guess, he knows what he's doing because, you know, he's Riley and he's the best at everything.
And that is, like, an ongoing theme throughout the movie, that, like, Sting always has a plan and he always knows what he's doing. So basically, he's Batman.
And everyone else is getting in his way, which is exactly what happens. The cop shows up. There is a gunfight. The bad guys drive away with Sting hot on their bumper. Like, we finally get some action here. He's shooting at them on his motorcycle while they're trying to get away. Somehow they never seem to get out of the parking garage. Is that convenient? Sting forces the thugs out of their car. Then they take a woman hostage. Sting shoots the bad guy.
But wait a minute. So this is like, there's two women, a mom and a daughter. The bad guy grabs the daughter, puts a knife to her throat, and threatens to kill her. And the mom is like, oh, put your gun down. You know, he's like telling Sting to put his gun down or he'll kill her. And the mom's like, ah, put your gun down. Do what he says. And she keeps like doing like jazz hands with like her
arms stretched
out. She's getting
the vapors, yeah.
And she is the worst actor in this movie. Like, and even when like Sting and the bad guy are going back and forth, the mom is in the background constantly trying to like be the focus of attention, waving her arms. It's just like, oh my God, lady. But again, had they had more time and money, I bet they would have reshot those scenes and told her, hey, can you pipe the fuck down a little
just
bit?
Get rid of her. Why couldn't it just be a lady walking alone? You know, why did the... Oh, I guess the mom had to be there because of what happens next. So Sting shoots the bad guy, daughter.
Yeah, he gets distracted by something, which is important for the movie. Like his gaze gets averted because somebody else shows up or a cop shows up, and that's what gives Sting the opening.
And then at the end, Sting tells the girl's mom's like, "Oh, I would never have had her in any danger or anything like that," and she just goes ahead and slaps him, and that was her whole purpose of being there.
Yeah, and then Sting shoots her in the head.
Now that would have been a movie there. So now we're back in the cap's office. Sting says he had hit a transmitter in the camera. He was handling it. Sting tries to take the camera from Cliff, and then he does. Cliff pours his heart out to Sting. Sting says he got his dad killed. Cliff says that...
Sting is saying to his brother, Cliff, yes, that Cliff got his dad.
But Cliff says that Sting can't do this alone, that he needs him. And then Sting thinks about it for a second and says to meet him in the lab. And then we are back with the bad guys in the counterfeit lab. And Kinsey is basically curled up in the against the wall crying alone. I guess they felt a need.
Too bad Sting didn't like pull her aside and show her how to cry on camera.
Right? Oh, yeah. This is true. And now we are in the lab. Sting is looking at the camera with a magnifying glass, which is kind of funny. I don't know. Very Sherlock Holmes, I guess. Sting.
It's like one of those magnifying glasses that you would use. Not like the kind you would hold. It's the kind you would use if you were like soldering.
Right.
Or
it's a
with
little
electronics.
Bit. Updated, a little bit. Yeah. Yeah. And then Sting calls the head bad guy. Sting says there won't be any more mistakes. Bad guy says they will call back at 10. Cliff and Sting talk about their dad. Riley says he thought their dad loved Cliff more. I'm like, I don't know. That whole bit there, I was just like, it was a little much. And then we get to see Sting cry.
Yeah.
So, that was the, that's the real climax here is when Riley cries. and then this is when he gives the classic line. Dad didn't go in as a cop. He went in as a father. And then I wrote, give Sting the Oscar. Sting apologizes. And he and Cliff then eye like a piece of the camera, which ends up being microfilm. I don't know. Any comments about any of that stuff?
It was fine. Again, like, you knew that the brothers were going to end up having like a heart-to-heart at some point. And I will say, like, the movie... The script does a good, it is generic and paint by the numbers, but it does a good job of setting up a situation and then paying it off with a resolution. Like, one of the things in the beginning of the movie is Daisy Fuentes is like having lunch with somebody. Anyway, she wants like Sting and his brother to like reconcile and get back together, blah, 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 blah. And now they're having to reconcile over trying to save her. So, you know, I mean, it does like some good, you know, things. It's just, I don't know, maybe if the dialogue was better, it'd be okay that the overall plot is so generic, but yeah, dialogue is so like, you could like hear in your head what's coming, you know, before they even
definitely
say
it. Some, cheesy dialogue. If it would have been intercut with more action, then it wouldn't be as obvious. But as you said, they clearly didn't have the budget, to do that. So now we're back at the bad guy warehouse. Angelo talks to the guy Sting interviewed earlier, Griffin. He tells him to lure Sting out or he'll be killed. Sting looks at the small piece of the camera with a magnifying glass, and then camera guy enters. And now one sort of subplot, if you will, is like they're like camera dude, like Jimmy Olsen, basically. He was dating the dog walker, so he's all sullen and down in the dumps, but he, I don't know why we even needed that, but they put it in there anyway. And then he gives the newly like scanned photographs to Sting, and basically they find out that what's in the microfilm is customs clearance codes. I guess it's a way for them to you know, transport their drugs or their the money. I'm really kind of confused.
Yeah, we never really find out what they're transporting and what they're smuggling. In fact, I think Sting here says, so they're smuggling something.
Brilliantly delivered, though. Brilliantly delivered.
I mean, and I guess, like, it doesn't really matter, you know, what they are smuggling. So it's fine. It's just a little weird that it's not never defined. That's when we find out, like, these are enhanced pictures. And that's when Sting sees that one of the people that was with the bad guys is his family friend. Yeah. And at this point, you know, Griffin has been like asked to basically lure Sting into.
And then we get another sort of classic kind of scenario from these movies where the head bad guy asks Griffin, who's not as bad, you know, he's just a traitor, I guess, to prove his loyalty by shooting Kenzie, Sting's wife, you know, and he sits there and thinks about it. And then he goes ahead and pulls the trigger, but there's no bullets in the gun. I don't know why that needed to be there, but it is. I guess it's to make us really not like Griffin, because it shows that he's 100% bad guy all the way, because he almost shot a woman. So Sting talks to Angelo again. Cliff tells the Cap he's going to take Riley home. Sting once again sits at his piano looking sad. And then he and Cliff talk again. And then this is when I started writing down.
Another long conversation.
I was like, wow, this is really starting to drag. And I was like, more drama. I'm like, come on. Like, you already, the Sting tear moment was like the end. You were never going to get anything more dramatic than that. Like, after that, it's time to kick ass. Like, but I guess they just had to fill time. So now we're back with the bad guys. British henchman puts together a high-powered rifle. Camera dude gives...
It's like a sniper rifle.
Yes. Camera dude, Jimmy Olsen, gives Sting new photos, and the reflections show Mark, the guy who got murdered at the beginning, and Angelo and Griffin. Then Riley shows up to interrogate Griffin. Henchman, using his high-powered rifle, he aims at Sting. And, Yahel already mentioned this scene. Griffin is in the way, and I was thinking here, like...
Somehow in the way.
Yeah.
Somehow.
And the thing here is that British henchman, he's like, oh, oi, get out of the way, mate. And why does he even care? Like, I feel like the bad guys don't even really need him at this point.
Right.
But maybe that's why they had that whole scene. It's like, oh, well, since he almost shot a woman, then clearly he's one of us. So we better not shoot him in the back of the head. But it happens anyway.
Maybe they feel like he might be useful.
Sure.
Because, I mean, the bad guys did, you know, part of the reason why they gave Griffin a gun that was not loaded is because they, you know, still have a use for Daisy Fuentes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So, I mean, I appreciate that, like, this movie, for the most part, like, things that happen make sense.
Mm. Oh,
and
yeah.
At least are in line with the characters. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a decent, like, mediocre script. For sure. Griffin, he gets shot. Cliff returns fire. And British henchman gets shot and just falls off a building, which I thought was very anticlimactic. Like, again, like, I mean, we can't overstate the lack of budget. Like, there should have maybe been, I feel like there should have been a foot chase, like at least if Sting could have gotten his hands on the guy. That's another thing is like Sting.
There's no fist fighting with from Sting at all,
yeah,
or from anybody really.
He never punches anyone. And maybe they didn't want to pay for a stunt double for him or something.
I think that's exactly what it is.
You
would have had to.
Sting don't need no stunt double.
Yeah, I was just going to say, and if you needed to have a stunt double for him for some scenes, like you could have gotten the guy that plays Jeff Farmer, NWO Sting, the guy that looks just like Sting, who wrestled in Japan as NWO Sting, and he would sometimes pop up in WCW.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that. Yeah, or I thought you were going to say just get Duke Nukem. But that would be 80s Sting or Surfer Sting.
But, they must have had a stunt double because it's not Sting doing those some of those motorcycle things.
Right. I mean, they just didn't want to film it, or they didn't have the time or the money to film any.
Yeah, I think that's what it comes down to, time and money.
Yeah, so now
because you have to, like, you know, if you're going to do, like, a fight scene, you got to pre-visit, and you got to prepare, you got to get your stunt people, you got to rehearse it.
Sure.
You got to plan out the shots where you are going to show Sting. Like, it's time-consuming.
Oh, absolutely. So now we're back at the bad guy warehouse. Sting and Cliff watch the bad guys, like, I guess, waiting for them. This is basically your sort of final meetup between the good guys and the bad guys. Sting rides up, of course, on his Harley and meets the gang. Angelo offers to shoot Sting, but Sting is like, if you do that, you'll never find out where the microfilm is. And then Cliff, he finds Kinsey, like, in a truck or something. Once again, the cops show up, and then we finally get some action. There's a firefight. Angelo, and this is weird. Okay, so there's a helicopter there. Angelo gets into the helicopter, but for whatever reason, it can't take off. Like, usually in these movies, the bad guy gets in a helicopter, and it ends up getting shot down, and there's a big explosion. But I guess they couldn't afford that, or, again, didn't want to film it. Who knows why? So he just runs and gets into a regular truck, which doesn't have the gravitas of a helicopter. and then Sting, driving another truck, forces that truck to crash.
They're like two of the same truck, too.
Yeah.
They're like two, like, they looked like they were like late 80s Ford trucks.
Yeah,
pickup trucks
something
or something.
Like, yeah, kind of like, what was that? Bronco, something like that. Yeah, like Bronco.
Something like that, yeah.
And that sort of chase scene takes much longer than you think it would. And then we just saw the big stunt, you know, bad guys, Ford Bronco flips over and like lands on its top. And it's like I'd say like a medium shot on Sting. And then from off frame, Angelo shows up and takes Sting hostage.
How did Sting not hear him or, you know, again, it's a time and money thing. They probably couldn't like do a shot where, like, you know, he's sneaking up or hiding from something, you know.
Yeah. It's pretty bad. But what's even worse here, but worse in a good way, I'd say, is the one-liner that Angelo delivers here. Do you remember what it is?
Oh, he's like, I never did get used to driving on the right side of the road or something like that.
If there was more of that, like, this would have been so much better. But yeah, that's what he says. And then basically they're, you know, Cliff is aiming a gun at, Sting and Angelo. And, let's see here. Cliff has him in his sight. Sting dives out of the way and Cliff shoots him in the shoulder though. He's still alive. And then Sting grabs a gun and he aims it at Angelo. And then he shoots a truck that explodes
and
for some reason.
It explodes immediately. Like, this is the truck that had already been, like, overturned or whatever.
Mm-hmm. And,
By the way, Steve, similar to earlier when no one could seem to get out of the parking garage, no one could seem to escape this warehouse
industrial
area.
Yeah.
Everyone was just constantly driving in a circle, apparently.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty hilarious. And I was just like, I don't know. It was just a decree from Eric Bischoff. He's like, you can't have Sting kill anyone, so he's going to shoot a truck instead. Like, it was... pretty unsatisfying. I mean, I can't imagine there'd be too many kids watching a movie like this. I mean, maybe me back in the 80s, but I mean, I think they probably would have been, like, midway through, they probably would have been bored and went to bed. I don't know. Why do you think they went this way?
With this ending?
Yeah, with him. With, all right, bad guy doesn't die.
Oh, just leaving him.
Yeah,
right?
Just leaving him.
I don't know. I thought that was really odd, too. He doesn't get arrested. They don't.
No, he does get arrested, at least. Like,
does he?
Don't
they just walk away?
Well,
I guess we assume he's been arrested.
Yeah, they don't show it. But yeah, we got to assume. In my headcanon, he gets arrested.
Or, I see, okay, I thought the bad guy was dying is the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because the bad guy says, you can't, after he gets shot, he says, you can't just leave me here like this. Implying that, like, hey, you're cops, you can't do this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, then Sting doesn't, looks like he's going to shoot him, but Sting shoots the truck, like you said. And then all the money's flying, and Sting's like, yeah, buy yourself. Why was there so much money in this truck?
Yeah. I think it's supposed to be the money for the ransom. Oh, wait, no, because there was no money.
There's no ransom.
There was
going to be
no
money exchange.
He was exchanging a camera for his wife. Yeah, that's a good point.
I guess the bad guy just has a bunch of money with him.
Oh,
but yeah.
Angelo was just like, oh, yeah, bring me my bag of money. After we exchange it for the camera, I want to go gamble it at the Indian casino.
Then you know, he gives him things like, gives him a dollar bill. It's like, buy yourself a cab.
Yeah. Oh God.
Or call yourself a cab. And then they walk away, and I'm like, so is he the guy dying? Is he gonna get arrested? It's very confusing. You know what happened? I wonder if they left it ambiguous like that. Planning for maybe in case there was going to be a sequel to have him return.
Yeah, because Angelo was just so memorable. I mean, the most generic British, like, bad guy that has ever been lazily written. But yeah, so we're not done there, ladies and gentlemen. We then cut to a very poorly delivered monologue from Kinsey to her dead brother's grave. Yeah, not. I mean, I guess it's nice that they gave Daisy Fuentes a chance to show her range, but I don't think she delivered. What do you think?
I don't think she delivered either.
Yeah, her.
She really doesn't have, like, a lot of lines in this, which is
no
fine.
Yes, for sure. And then we end with the marriage of Riley and Kinsey, and then the very last shot. I don't know, it feels very Michael Bay is them. I guess I forgot to mention it earlier. One of the things at the very beginning of the film is, I guess a cop, like a beat cop, tries to pull Sting over on his motorcycle, and here he succeeds.
Yeah, it's like a state trooper or something.
Yeah, and here he succeeds, and Riley and Sting, Riley and Kinsey make out as the cop writes the ticket, which I guess is supposed to be funny or something, but it just means the end of the movie.
Really, what did you think about the song that plays at the end when they're, like, getting married and making out while the cop's writing the ticket?
Cheesy?
Yeah, it's real bad.
I mean, I expected at least a Chris Gaines level of... musical prowess at the end there, but yeah, so that is Shutter Speed. Anything else to add before we render our verdict here?
No, I think you covered it quite deliciously and nicely.
Too well, just like Steve Borden Sting. Here we go. All right, Officer Velasquez, do you think that Shutter Speed should be remembered for all of human history or tossed in the black void of obscurity, never to be heard from again?
Man, this is a tough one because, like we've said, Sting's performance is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
The movie's competent, but it also drags.
Mm-hmm.
Not slow, but Sting did just retire. You know, I would say if you're a fan of Sting, you should watch the movie. You'll enjoy it. You know, I'm going to give it a remember, but just barely.
Yeah, it's I feel like I'm right there with you. Yeah, it's worth it to see Sting do a good job as an actor. Yeah, everything else is pretty forgettable.
Yeah, this isn't, and you know, this isn't like watching a Hulk Hogan movie where you're gonna laugh at, you know, either the ridiculousness
right.
of the story or
so
the performance.
Bad. Yeah, it's not so bad. It's good, which is unfortunate.
It's not bad.
Yeah,
it's just kind of like a little slow.
Very mediocre. Feel like it deserves a stalemate, but then I also feel like it needs to be remembered. Yeah, for Sting, I'll do it for you, Stinger. Here we go.
In accordance to Obscurity Now, the most important streaming YouTube podcast in all of the internet, you shall be remembered. Yes. Good show. Good show.
All right.
So while we were covering the movie, I actually managed to find a little bit of information about this film.
Okay.
It was very difficult. But there's an article from Variety from 1998.
Okay.
So this is like when the movie was basically cleared to go into production. Mm-hmm. It was made by Trident Entertainment and Mandalay Entertainment. They're the same companies that did the TNT movies starring Hulk Hogan, Assault on Devil's Island movies.
We'll get to those someday.
Yeah, I'm sure we will. I'll just read this verbatim. If the shutter speed movie clicks in the Nielsen's, aka the ratings, Eric Bischoff says it could end up as a weekly hour-long action series on TNT with Sting in the role of the cop whose brother is also on the force. So, they were like, this was a bit of a backdoor pilot. I was actually going to say when we started talking about the movie in general, how like it feels to me like it's like an hour long cop drama stretched to like, you know, 2 hours or 90 minutes. Really.
Absolutely. Yeah. They didn't make it different enough for anyone to want to see more. Like, I feel like if they wanted this to be a TV show, like it's just so generic. Like no one would want to see more, right? Did you want to see more? Right. 'Cause I didn't.
No, I definitely didn't.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
No, I did find this interview from some kind of like, I don't know, AOL type chat. With Sting, and he did get asked about shutter speed a few times, but the only thing he says here, he's asked if he would be doing any other movies soon, and he said, yeah, if I had it my way, yes, I had so much fun doing it, I definitely want to do more. Someone asked him, I love this question, this is from Candy Perfume Girl.
Okay.
I saw your movie Shutter Speed, were you reluctant to work with Daisy Fuentes?
Okay.
He said he liked working with her, that she was fun and beautiful and a real pro, and that he wanted her to get involved in Monday Nitro or at least a pay-per-view.
I bet he did.
yeah. He confirms here that Shutter Speed was made as a two-hour movie of the week with the idea that maybe it could be kind of like a pilot as well. But then he says, I wouldn't hold my breath.
Hey, Daisy, about it. You ever been put in the Scorpion Deathlock? Come here, let me try it out on you.
Anyways, that's kind of like pretty much all of the background information I could find on Shutter Speed. I'm kind of surprised I even found that stuff. So,
yeah, good work. Well, I think that's it for Shutter Speed. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about for yourself? Sounds like you've been working hard on your videos.
Yeah. If you're on my Patreon, I posted like a new clip. I've also been tweeting. I actually tweeted a clip the other day too from it. I've been tweeting out some pictures here and there from some of the 3D scenes that I've been making for it, but. Yeah, I'm hoping to have it out here shortly. I'm past the most difficult part to edit, so hopefully not too much longer to go.
Well, It's interesting that you mentioned the 3D editing, because maybe you'll be proud of me. I'm at least proud of myself. I finally downloaded and opened Blender, and I actually made something useful with it.
Oh.
I'm working on a new variant cover for Escape to Earth 3, and I'm trying to recreate this. I thought it was a Rob Liefeld cover, but it's actually a Todd McFarlane. And the logo, it's the Incredible Hulk logo that they were doing back then, that's very 3D looking and looks like bricks and stuff. And of course, I don't have the money to hire someone to do that. So, but luckily, old Blender was there for me, and it wasn't too difficult. But yeah, I've also been doing 3D printing, and I want to learn how to make my own
models. And...
Yes, exactly. So this will be a step forward toward that. Pretty soon we'll have our own action figures, buddy. Aren't you looking forward to that?
Yeah, Blender 4.0 is like, because I used to use a Cinema 4D almost exclusively, and occasionally I would use Blender, but I just found it to be like unintuitive, and at least not as intuitive as Cinema 4D and blah, blah, blah. But then when I came back to, like, the last time I had used Blender was like Blender 2.8, and now they're like on 4.0, and Blender 4.0 is fucking awesome. Like, they've really, really made it a lot easier and simpler to understand and use.
Well, there's no reason to not try it since it's free. So
yeah, man, there's a million tutorials out there.
Yeah, I've noticed. Yeah, it's crazy. But yeah, other than that, I guess we will see everybody next Sunday as we continue to unearth more obscure media, only on Obscurity Now. We'll see you next week.
You've been enjoying Obscurity Now, a podcast that's recorded live to tape and streamed to Twitch and YouTube. Subscribe so you never miss an episode or hilarious quip. Take us with you by following the download links provided in the show notes to wherever you get podcasts. And take notice of our various social media links if that's what you're into. I'm not here to judge. And make sure you join us live next week at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, as we continue to discuss more obscure media only on Obscurity Now.